Well, welcome into the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Ailish and Justin. 60 minutes ahead of Jays and Mariners, game two of the series. A great home opener win for the Jays last night. I was in attendance. I had a blast. Ballpark looks beautiful, and it was packed. Bassett on the mound tonight, the hound dog for Looney Dogs Tuesday. Fitting. First pitch 7:07 on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, the Fan.
Elsewhere, we're entering the final week of the NHL regular season with still plenty to play for. We're going to have Frank Saravelli on in a moment to try to clear up the playoff picture at the bottom of the Eastern Conference, or as we like to put it, the mushy middle.
Mushy middle. Adam Stanley from Augusta ahead of the Masters. That's at 6:30 tonight. His newest article up on Sportsnet. .ca previews the weekend and, of course, takes a close look on the three Canadians in the field. We'll chat with him a little later.
Raptors on Sportsnet 1 tonight against the Indiana Pacers and Pascal Siakam. We'll have best bets and a little bit more on your experience at the Blue Jays home opener last night.
Okay, so before we bring in Frank, we got a little bit of time to talk about tonight's big game between the Mariners and the Blue Jays. And it's big because it's Chris Bassett on the mound, and it's kind of an opportunity to show the strengths of this pitching staff that were the main part of the Blue Jays' somewhat success last year, that go just beyond Berríos, because Berríos has been the star, and it hasn't been, you know, as star-studded start for the rest of the starters. Wow, I said starters a lot in that sentence. And so Bassett has an opportunity to show, like, why he was so valuable last year and turn this little bit of a start around.
Where are the stars, I guess, is a big question, because in non-Berríos starts so far for the Toronto Blue Jays, 2-6 record, pretty ugly in the games that, again, were not started by Jose Berríos. We're up to three of those, of course. Five of those six losses, pretty non-competitive. Outscored 50-26 in those games, so nearly 2-1. Right now, it just has not looked the same when it hasn't been a Jose Berríos start. And I guess Bassett's been front and center of that. Both of his starts have not gone according to plan. You go back last year where, yeah, kind of blew up in the first game, but he put it back on the tracks pretty quickly. And Chris Bassett's going to need to do that if the star-studded starting rotation is going to continue to be the main driver of success for the Toronto Blue Jays as it was last year.
Yeah, Chris Bassett last year, I think, was a bit of an underrated workhorse of this pitching rotation. Obviously, Kevin Gausman was the main guy we talked about a lot, and then Jose Berríos has come in and been a really great addition to this team. Manoah got a lot of discourse, and Bassett kind of fell into that mushy middle in a sense. But last year, 200-plus innings for the first time in his career, is top 10 in Cy Young voting in the AL. And I think you just started to understand that he can go out there and he can give the Blue Jays an opportunity to win almost every single time he had a chance last year. I know he has all the pitches, and I think maybe earlier in the year, last year with the pitch clock, it was like, oh, it's going to be hard for him. He's going to have to go through all these pitches. And anyway, he figured it out. And I think this start is a really great opportunity to show the Chris Bassett that we came to love and maybe underappreciate last year at times, because this rotation, with the way that Gausman pitched the other day with his velocity being down, it's still in question. We feel good about Berríos. You should feel good that Kikuchi can be, you know, a pretty solid option for this rotation. But Bowden Francis hasn't looked stellar. There's a lot of question marks at the back end. You know, Alek Manoah is just starting to maybe throw in the minor leagues. He's still a long ways away. And Ricky Tiedemann doesn't seem to be coming up anytime soon. So they need to be able to have a level of confidence in three of the five starters, whether that's Kikuchi, whether that's Bassett, whether that's Berríos, and of course Gausman. So tonight's a big spotlight night for Bassett.
Yeah, it's an interesting narrative night too, because obviously there's been a lot of frustration with the batting order. I mean, the Blue Jays bats break out to a certain extent last night in the home opener, but Bassett's opposition tonight, George Kirby, small sample, but Kirby's been really, really good against right-handed hitting. And I guess that would be the specialty if the Blue Jays have one offensively, at least with this lineup. Only two lefties in the lineup, Varsho and Biggio. And the lefties are the ones that generally can eat against George Kirby, or at least have so far this year. So it could be another tough night if a predominantly right-handed hitting lineup does what, you know, it generally fails to do against Kirby, at least to start the season. A big spot for those lefties, Varsho and Biggio. Maybe Biggio to a lesser extent have been part of the part, I don't want to say part of the problem, but part of the frustration. Certainly with Dalton Varsho, maybe a big chance for those two to at least put the grab a hold of their narrative and have a good night, because it might be tough on the righties tonight.
Yeah, so Blue Jays, Mariners, 7 o'clock. That's on the network and, of course, on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We'll keep teeing that up a little later. Let's bring in Frank Saravelli of DailyFaceoff.com. Frank, how's it going? Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday, guys. What's going on?
You know what? I'm going to throw it to Justin because he had a grand old idea to have a fun little chat with you, because we really enjoyed our chat last
week.
That's
as rare as a solar eclipse. Way to go.
Yes, there you go.
So I'm going to let him tee it up.
Well, we're trying to keep you busy, but like, not that we've been neglecting watching the likes of the Washington Capitals all year, but I think you probably have a firmer grasp on what's going on in what we call the mushy middle, the Eastern Conference playoff chase, where a bunch of teams maybe... not trying to give it away, but not necessarily the most talented group of teams vying for two final playoff spots. There are four teams separated by 2 points vying for the divisional spot in the Metro. Islanders currently holding it, followed by Pittsburgh, Washington, and Philly, 1 and 2 points back, respectively. Washington, Philly, that is 2 points back. They're also competing with the Red Wings for the final wild card position. So I thought we'd do like a little superlatives where you're involving those teams in this discussion. Maybe you can give us a little primer, I guess, on the final week of the season and the chase for the final two spots in the Eastern Conference. So again, superlatives most likely to, we'll start with this one, just most likely to capture the number three seed in the Metropolitan Division as it stands right now.
I think the math would indicate the New York Islanders. They've played much better of late, and to me, they've got the goaltender who's the clear differentiator.
Okay. Most likely to please the NHL offices by getting into the playoffs in the number three seed.
That would be the Pittsburgh Penguins, and it's not necessarily for Sidney Crosby, but it would also mean a matchup of the Carolina Hurricanes and Jake Guentzel against the Pittsburgh Penguins in round one, which would be quite delicious. And, oh, by the way, who's been starting in goal for the Pens of late and has been outstanding is Alex Nedeljkovic, who, if you remember correctly, was not given a qualifying offer from the Carolina Hurricanes a few years ago. So to me, there's the Sid factor, which everyone wants. You always want as much Sidney Crosby as you can get your hands on. And then the other part is the rivalry that's kind of maybe just beginning, as Jake Guentzel has been exactly as advertised for the Canes to this point.
The Penguins, of course, were here last night. Dubas and Spezza had their moment on the television screen when they lost in overtime. So that one's an interesting one. I think if I was picking a team that I actually, and this maybe seems contradictory of someone that lives in Toronto, but I actually would want to see the Penguins get in. And maybe it's just because of Sidney Crosby and because of being a hockey fan growing up, he was my favorite. But I think it's a bit of a polarizing take here, because people don't want to see Kyle Dubas with success, and they don't want to see that team get a chance when they had a pretty bad start to this season. Like, do you think that is there like a different, I guess, camp that you're seeing when they talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins in terms of playoff success?
No, I think there's a lot of validity to that, that basically if the Penguins were to get in, what you're looking at is a pretty flawed roster that just happened to play well for a 10 game period of time this season. I mean, you know, there's so many different spots to look at for Pittsburgh and say they should have been in such better position. What if their power play with all these stars wasn't so anemic? What if they didn't seem to blow so many leads? What if, you know, there's a million questions to ask. What if Evgeny Malkin played like he has these last 5 or 7 games? The Pittsburgh Penguins of late kind of look like the Penguins of old. And that is, I don't think it's a scary thought to anyone, because I think we have so much sort of evidence to the contrary, but it's almost like they sneak in on the, you know, as the Caps and Flyers have fumbled the bag here, that's kind of what happens when you have a pillow fight, is if it drags on for long enough, someone kind of just has the ability to come in and deliver a knockout blow.
I think this next one, most likely to, is maybe what you want a team that sneaks in, whether they earn it or they just fall into it, is you actually want them to have like upset potential. If you're going to get in there at the end, you want somebody to actually make some noise. So which team is most likely to actually possess some upset potential?
I think that's also the Islanders because of the goaltender. I mean, look, Sorokin is 100%.
Ooh, looks like we lost Frank here for a moment there. So Islanders, just to recap, as we go through the
superlatives
for the Eastern Conference, most likely to please the NHL offices, well, that would be the Penguins getting into the number three seed.
And
because
I think me too.
Yeah, I think it would please a lot of people. I mean, you got a lot of storylines there. Gensel, the rematch, Nedeljkovic, maybe to a lesser extent, but it's also Sidney Crosby in a playoff series. And we're talking about upset potential. I do think the Penguins do have some. But the other two were to grab the number one seed, so most likely, or number three seed, most likely to be in the Metropolitan picture would be the Islanders, and have that upset potential would be the Islanders because of their goaltending. I'm kind of leaning the Penguins, though, for the upset potential. It looks like a team, like, you want them at least to be playing well as they trend towards the playoffs. And the Penguins, despite the loss to Toronto last night in overtime, they've been playing really well. And Sidney Crosby, as much as, like, the goaltender is a powerful force that can kind of change the way a series looks or plays out, I feel like Sidney Crosby can change the way a series plays out as well.
Well, I think the Penguins just have this factor of experience and the wherewithal and the, I guess, like, desire to not let this be these guys' final playoff games. Like, there is a world where we will see the final time that Sidney Crosby plays for a playoff team, and it doesn't feel like he wants that to be this time's story. And the idea that this team kind of got maybe overlooked or underlooked in terms of what they needed, and then they find themselves in an opportunity where they are right now to maybe win out and get into the playoffs. Like, that is driven by Sidney Crosby, who has had an incredible season, and he's, I don't even know how old this guy is now, but it's like he's aging backwards, right? Like, he's doing things he did when he was younger, and it's so exciting to watch. And of course, as a hockey fan and a Canadian hockey fan, I love Sid. I want to see success for Sid. I think there's a part of that, like, nostalgic part of me too, that doesn't want to see that be the end of Sid's career, where he plays for a bad Penguins team that added a bunch of old guys and they just need to go through a development curve. And that's not what I picture for Sidney Crosby. For the Capitals, sure, I picture that being maybe something that happens for Sid, Ovi's career. They're just kind of hanging around waiting for him to score goals. But the Penguins, I feel like they have a little bit more to them that I would like to see them at least get into the playoffs and see what happens.
Okay, we got Frank Saravalli back on the line. Frank, you were just talking about how the Islanders possess the upset potential. That's primarily because of the goaltender, but any other reasons for that?
No, that's the big one. I think, you know, you look at Sorokin, and he's the one guy that's completely capable of taking four games in a seven-game stretch. And Ailish, I guess the big thing that I would disagree with what you're saying is, a lot of what you are talking about feels like it is rooted in exactly that, nostalgia.
Yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
With this Penguins team, they haven't won a playoff round since 2018. Mm-hmm. That's forever ago and a day. And look, I understand the star power that this team has and their ability to look really good at times. But I also look at their defense core and I say, you know, even with Chris Letang and Erik Karlsson, they're a long ways from being a team that I think can knock off a team that's significantly better than them for, say, Carolina or, you know, one of the other teams if they were to be the second wild card spot, likely at this point, you know, potentially Boston or the Rangers. Like, I just don't see them sizing up well with either one of those teams.
We are chatting the final few playoff spots in the Eastern Conference with the Daily Faceoffs, Frank Saravalli. We're mainly talking Penguins, Islanders, Capitals, and Flyers here, but I want to lump in the Red Wings because they're still chasing the second wild card into this next one. The team most likely to suffer consequences should they miss the playoffs.
I'm going to take a more broad view, and I'm going to say, the answer is going to surprise you, it's the Flyers. And the reason why that is because I think that they got so infatuated with the idea of making the playoffs that they really missed out on asking themselves some significant existential questions when it came to the trade deadline. Should we be engaging in talks potentially to move Travis Konechny? Are we extending him? Maybe those were going on behind the scenes. You know, but what other players? Should we have traded Scott Laughton? What would we have done had we been 10 points out of a playoff spot instead of at that point in time pretty comfortably in one? And now you go through all those things and could potentially miss the playoffs and pick 13th and have a percent shot at getting Macklin Celebrini in a year that you were supposed to be rebuilding. Like, to me, we could talk about, you know, a bunch of teams fumbling the bag this, you know, the last 10 games or so. And frankly, I would include the New Jersey Devils in that category as well. The fact that we had the Penguins come back in and all these other teams that were so far out of it and the Devils are still not even in the picture, to me, says something. But I think the Flyers, as enthralling as this season has been for a Flyers fan that entered with no expectations, to fall short of that and to be, you know, squarely in the exact muck of the murky middle, man, that's about as bad as it gets, in my view. I'd much rather, if you're a Flyers fan, to sit there and be like, well, at least we're going to be picking in the top five. What's the win of this season other than the buzzwords that you're going to hear about culture and compete and everything else for a team that, oh, by the way, over these last seven games, man, it all coincides when I watch this team with the healthy scratching of Sean Couturier. It feels like they kind of quit on John Tortorella, but maybe I'll be proven wrong in the next few games.
I guess a bit of an opposite, most likely to, would be the shrugging shoulders. We missed, but no big deal. There's always next year. I would have almost thought the Flyers, but your perspective, it makes me think that maybe they got a little too hungry for success and didn't think a big picture. But which team that would be on the outside looking in would just be probably okay with it?
My guess would be the Detroit Red Wings or the Washington Capitals. Mm. I mean, the Caps knew that they were in a tough spot. They, so much of, as you pointed out, has been focused on Alex Ovechkin. I think that team has competed its butt off under Spencer Carberry. I think their structure, their attention to detail has all been really impressive, that maybe that's something that they could build on to get back next season. And I guess you could make some of those same comments about the Flyers. But the other team that kind of lends itself to that answer is the Red Wings, because go back and look at Steve Yzerman's trade deadline posture, and he wasn't buying or selling. He wasn't putting, you know, some chips in the middle to say, this is our year, this is a team that I think can do it. And part of that is the mountain of evidence that we saw, that this team has been almost bipolar in the sense that they're either hot or cold. And they're nothing in between. They're either going on a tear and having these thrilling overtime games, or they're losing, you know, 10 out of 14 games in a month, and they can't seem to get it together and can't find their way. So it's another building block, not an acceptable season by any stretch for Detroit, because they wanted to be in the playoffs. But I think in some ways they also did at the same time make some meaningful progress in that path.
Yeah, it's been a long build, though, for Steve Yzerman. Been a long build. You're adding Patrick Kane, and it doesn't result in playoff dates would be, I think, pretty disappointing. I'm with you with the Caps, though, in terms of shrugging the shoulders. Like, I do feel like they can walk away from the season feeling like it's semi-successful, especially with Alexander Ovechkin catching fire a little bit.
Well, then Ovi can also play less playoff games, which means he'll be fresher for more regular season games, which means he can score more regular season goals. Right?
No,
it's all
whatever
the galaxy.
Whatever he did during All-Star break in Dubai, like, please sign me up for some of that in my life.
Seriously. Yeah, more evidence that we all need to go to Dubai. All these games or this race will play out on Sportsnet Plus tonight. Islanders hosting the Rangers, Flyers in Montreal, Red Wings, and Capitals in a big, I guess, 4-point game to a certain extent. We were talking a little bit earlier before the show about, you know, the viewpoint of certain players south of the border, Frank. And I guess we looked at this two different ways. The most popular American versus the player in the NHL who Americans care most about. Is there a difference there between the most popular and the player that I guess generally the United States fan base cares most about?
I would say that I think the United States fan base, like, we're just talking pure casuals. You know, which player,
like watching a national TV game, like I guess the biggest protagonist the NHL could offer that audience,
it would be Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
I like that. That's progress, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, when you consider the previous TV partner that the NHL had in the US, the Edmonton Oilers, Toronto Maple Leafs, didn't matter how big the stars were, they didn't show up on NBC. And I'm not criticizing them. They felt like they could play to the markets for ratings, and maybe that was a business success for them. I have no idea. But the fact that ESPN and TNT are regularly going to Toronto and Edmonton is, I think, hugely important for the game, because those are the best players. So if we're asking the next question, which is who's the most popular American-born player, I'd say it's Austin Matthews. And then if you want to ask the next question after that of who is the most popular American-born player playing on an American-based team, the answer is Jack Hughes.
Hmm.
Okay, Jack Hughes. He was just in the news 5 minutes ago.
Three of us were wrong with our predictions for what you might say.
Undergoing shoulder surgery, another thing the Devils probably could have done a little sooner. All right, Frank, you're most likely to be our favorite guest, so you can.
Oh, well, look at that. Thank you. I was going to say, things didn't really go well for Jack Hughes after that. People played pay to watch me play.
Yeah, it was kind of a bad take.
No, it's not a bad take because it's factually accurate. Mm-hmm. I would say that since then, the season didn't unfold as he might have wished.
Yes, maybe bad karma. Maybe that's more. Mm. All right, Frank, we'll have a great week and we'll chat with you next week. Thanks so much.
See you guys. Have a good one.
That is Frank Saravelli, dailyfaceoff.com. Yes, if you missed it just before we came on, Jack Hughes is going to be undergoing shoulder surgery for an upper body injury, and the Devils are kind of just pretenders at this point.
Yeah, not the year that Jack Hughes envisioned by any stretch of the imagination. Better, decidedly, for his brother Quinn Hughes, likely going to win the Norris Trophy. But Jack Hughes was like a hot, you know, Hart Trophy trendy pick before the season, and it's been brutal for the Devils. It's been a really tough year. They, like other teams in this race for the Metropolitan Division third seed, are going to be looking inward this offseason, but maybe no team stronger than the Devils, who just didn't have things play out the way they expected.
Leafs will face the Devils tonight and again on Thursday. My best bet, though, comes from a different Toronto team. All three Toronto teams in action tonight, so you could do a Toronto parlay or you could fade the Toronto teams, and I'm kind of doing that with my best bet. My best bet tonight is the Pacers to beat the Raptors by at least 13 points, and Pascal to get plus 25 plus points. He's back at Scotiabank Arena. Obviously, he's going to love that atmosphere. You know there'll be lots of Pascal fans in the crowd. That's plus 225 on my best bet for tonight. That game's on a little later after us. Pacers and Raptors on Sportsnet 1 at 7 o'clock. But, you know, I like to cheer for Pascal, and I think the Raptors are kind of mailing it in at this point. So Pacers on the spread and Pascal.
You say mailing it in, but surging suddenly after a really good weekend.
Well,
but I mean how much?
They beat the Washington.
Yeah, big Wizards win over the Bucks, right?
I know, and we predicted that. So maybe they're hot. No, maybe three wins in a row.
We were tiptoeing around it. We didn't have the guts to do it, and we should have done it last Friday. But we didn't. I'm also fading a Toronto-based team, and that will be the Toronto Blue Jays. I think it's a tough matchup tonight. I was surprised to see the line. I get the Mariners minus 105. I mean, Kirby's been really good to start the season. Chris Bassett's been trying to find it, and I think Kirby matches up particularly well against this Blue Jays team. But I will offer some of reprieve, I guess, if you're a Blue Jays fan needing some offense. I think Kevin Biggio has a decent chance to hit one out of the yard tonight.
Okay.
Being one of the few lefties who's going to have a chance. Mm-hmm. I like Kevin Biggio tonight, plus 850 to hit a home run. Just searching for matchups here. Biggio home run, 850 tonight. Maybe the first two, a sprinkle on that, make it a little more valuable.
Okay, that's fun, Justin. I love a home run pick. Tonight it is Kirby and Bassett. As you mentioned, we talked about it. Bassett's got a big opportunity tonight to kind of show that, you know, this rotation is a massive strong point of this team. You know, have a little of a slower start, so must bounce back at home. And it's Looney Dogs tonight, so over 50,000 sold tonight would be my prediction.
That's interesting. Like, it's not like the PWHL where it's just like record, right? It seems last year in terms of selling the Looney Dogs. But, you know, there was like a gradual increase. Can you start that over?
People got hyped.
Yeah. Or do you lose some of the momentum and you got to start anew? I guess we'll find out on the first Looney Dog night of the season.
Got that dog
in them. Revamped Rogers Center.
I didn't get, when I was there yesterday, a chance to see where the stands would be. You know, if they've moved, if they've created more opportunity to buy Looney Dogs, I won't be able to make it tonight. So all my Looney Dogs fans, you better be consuming for us.
Last year, your sole focus, first time in the yard, was finding the quickest way to get the glizzy. So I'm a little surprised that you went a different route last night.
I'm older and wiser and trying to be healthier. Okay. Couple things here. If you want to stick with us on the Fan Pregame, we're going to Sportsnet 590 to talk to Adam Stanley at the Masters. You can catch it on Sportsnet Plus 2. Hockey Central on Sportsnet 360. Raptors Pregame on Sportsnet 1. And Blue Jays Central on Sportsnet. That's all next.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back into the Fan pregame. We're up on Sportsnet Plus and Sportsnet 590, the Fan, for the next half hour. We were getting very excited before the show, working through our Masters picks. We're in a Masters pool. We're making Masters brackets. Like, it is, it's time. It's the best time of the year.
You've converted me, by the way, on Hideki Matsuyama.
Yeah, you're in?
I'm in.
Yes.
I'm in.
I got another one. Yeah, I'm just collecting Hideki fans for this week. I don't know. Whatever. Just had a hunch. Maybe that will be confirmed or shut down by our next guest, Adam Stanley, Sportsnet, down at the Masters. Adam, I want to ask you about the solar eclipse glasses. I need, do you have them with you? Can I see them? How are they? You should sell those for millions of dollars.
I do not have them like on my person right now, but I have them in my bag. So I definitely do have them. They were the first thing that was just bestowed upon me when I arrived at Augusta National on Monday, and they just think of everything, and they're like really sweet. I didn't really think all that much about eclipse glasses, and then I got the Masters special edition ones, and I was like, these are awesome. I will be keeping these forever.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it is awesome. I mean, I don't want it. I didn't want any part of any eclipse glasses. Then I saw yours and I was like, that is unbelievably cool.
I would
cool.
like those ones.
Yes, that is unbelievably cool. I was going to follow up saying like, is that just Augusta's way? They just get it? Do they just nail everything like that? Do they ever miss? Do they ever leave you thinking, oh, that could have been better? Like, is that just how the Masters is, where they just have every base covered?
Regardless of what you think about the Masters and, you know, the Augusta National Golf Club and et cetera, they don't miss. They do not miss, no matter what it is, no matter if it's the lineup to get into the merchandise facility, if it's the concessions, if it's the on-site parking, if it's solar eclipse glasses, the Masters just does not miss. And I think it's one of those things that it wasn't surprising that the Masters had its own eclipse glasses, but it was also really, really cool as well.
Okay, one last eclipse question, and then it can come around in another 100 years. Did you get to see it? Because I know that you guys were kind of in the perfect path. It looks sunny and beautiful. It was a bit cloudy here. So what was your actual eclipse viewing experience?
Yeah, so short answer is yes, we got to see it. Augusta got about 77% totality. So, you know, at one point in the middle of the afternoon, they actually turn on the floodlights on the driving range that they usually reserve for kind of first thing in the morning and late at night. I don't really know why they did that, because it was still, you know, relatively bright out. But yeah, you look up in the sky, there it is, 70, you know, three quarters of the way covered. And they were right. The best viewing position was Amen Corner. And
so cool.
I was down there and I saw it. And I was like, this is probably one of the neatest things that's ever happened.
Honestly, like, already been a once in a lifetime trip to the Masters. But let's talk about the biggest stories besides the eclipse this weekend. You're around there and it's just getting started. Like, what is the biggest talking point this season? Because every time around, there's something new. I'm wondering what it is this time around.
Yeah, I think it's the golf course. I think the golf course is the talking point year after year after year, because, you know, the field changes so much. There's the amateurs that get into this championship, unlike all the other ones. You know, there's obviously, this is the first time that the LIV golfers and the PGA Tour golfers are together in the same event on the golfing calendar. You know, it's been almost 10 months since we've had a major championship. So everyone's kind of antsy and just itchy for this level of golf to return. And then obviously back home in Canada, it's the first sign of spring when the Masters is on. And obviously the Blue Jays season has just started and the NHL playoffs are right around the corner. So it's kind of that sure signs of spring includes the Masters, but it's the golf course. In years past, you know, Augusta National itself has maybe has lost a little bit of the fire just due to Mother Nature. But right now, like, I followed the Canadians for their practice round this morning, and on number four, that short par four, number three, those balls were bouncing off these greens like concrete. Like, this is a fiery golf course. This is going to be one of these things where you have to be absolutely dialed. Now, the issue obviously is that on Thursday, we're supposed to be getting hurricane strength wind or tornado strength winds and like torrential rain. So thankfully Friday, Saturday, Sunday is supposed to look really, really nice. So that if they can kind of navigate things on Thursday, this is going to be a quick and fiery Augusta National, which is not something that we've seen over the last number of years.
I guess your Masters windbreaker will come in handy on Thursday.
my Masters windbreaker, and probably sitting in the fanciest media center on planet Earth for most of the day is gonna help as well. Yeah.
Slip into something Masters cozy, I guess, once you get inside that media room. I'm not sure if you've been John Rahm adjacent in your time at Augusta just yet, but of course the defending champion comes back with a different story behind him, given that John Rahm is now a member of the LIV Golf Tour. How do you juxtapose what, and it's different because he wasn't a winner last year, or wasn't a winner yet at this time last year, but John Rahm's vibe, what's that like right now?
Off, I guess, would probably be the best way to describe it. He had his press conference today, and the manner in which he was answering the questions suggested that he was maybe a little bit more uncertain with his decision to go to LIV than he initially was so excited about. It seemed like he maybe believed that his transition to LIV would kickstart an aggressively fast coming together of professional golf and the professional golf tours. It hasn't happened yet, and it doesn't really seem like it's right around the corner either. And he's like, I still love the PGA Tour. I will say it again. It was hard for me not to be at Riviera, TPC Scottsdale, the Players Championship. These are not just observations that we as the media had. These are words coming out of John Rahm's mouth that, like, man, you made this decision. You went, you took the money, you left. Now, of course, you're at the forefront of wanting to bring all of the top players back together more often, but you're also the one that's saying, you're missing these tournaments. You're missing some of that individual competitive fire. I think he's going to come into the Masters with 17 or so fewer rounds played this year than last year. Now, his team, this Legion 13 team, of his, which is not a sentence I thought I would ever say, did recently win one of the LIV events as a team. But for someone like John Rahm, who's just so individually fired up to get those competitive juices flowing, it's just not doing it for him. And that's not just me observing. That's him kind of using his own words to say, he misses the PGA Tour and he's watching how dominant Scottie Scheffler's been. And I'm going to be fascinated to see what happens with John Rahm this week, for sure.
Is that not the most short-sighted thing ever in history, that John Rahm thought him taking a bunch of money and wearing a varsity LIV golf jacket would be the thing that brought together two rival golf leagues? I get that he, maybe number one in the world at the time. I don't know where he was at, but John Rahm's John Rahm. But is that not patently absurd to suggest that he thought he could bridge the gap by taking a bunch of money?
Yeah, I mean, reigning Masters champion, four-time winner on the PGA Tour last year. If he wasn't number one, he was number two in the world. And that's, if you're thinking that strongly about yourself and your brand as the savior of men's professional golf, it's a pretty bold statement and a pretty bold belief to have in yourself. Now, has there been maybe more progress, than ever up to this point, including, obviously that big meeting in the Bahamas with Jay Monahan and Yasser, the head of the PIF and a lot of those player directors on the PGA Tour. Yeah, 100%. But, I think for the casual sports fan who is probably wondering, when is this deal happening? I thought at the Canadian Open, they said they were merging. Well, A, they're not. They just agreed to stop suing each other. And B, this is in front of the Department of Justice in the United States. This is a dangerous precedent that could be set where a foreign government is essentially owning part of a American-based sports league. And, the Department of Justice and the American legal system is not just going to let this happen. So there's a lot more factors involved than I think a lot of people realize. And, John Rahm was probably thinking in the best way possible that by the end of 2024, he'd be back being able to have his cake and eat it too and play on the PGA Tour. And it's just not happening that way. And through the first quarter of the season, he's starting to feel that the consequences of his actions.
Somebody that stayed and somebody that's always interesting to contrast is Rory McIlroy, of course, trying for his 10th time, I believe, to complete the career Grand Slam. is this the year? Are we seeing signs of life from Rory, or is this going to be another sad montage of all the other people that have completed it while he doesn't get a chance?
Rory has been so fascinating this week because he was the last person to check in. He arrived 30 minutes before his press conference, and he ripped out of there so fast, which is so unlike him. But what happened is they skipped over the flowery intro from the green jacket at the front. They went right into questions. He started answering questions when the room was only, maybe a quarter full. He answered 7 or 8 questions. He was up there for 13 minutes. They ended it abruptly, and he was done at 12:33 when he was supposed to start at 12:30. And then he just went out for his practice, and he was off to the races after that. So this is a very, very different approach for Rory McIlroy. Obviously, he's, the best talker in the game. He's kind of tried everything, taking a week off, playing before, arriving on Sunday. Now he's trying to do this like ultimate, don't bother me, don't distract me, not doing anything. So to your question specifically, like, I hope that this is the year. I mean, Tiger Woods was asked directly if he thought Rory was going to complete the Grand Slam. And Tiger was like, it's not if, it's when. He's too good to not win this championship. He's going to be a great Masters champion when the time is appropriate. It could be this week. Rory said, the greatest of our generation says that. That means a lot to me. It could happen. It could not happen. But very, very clearly, Rory is trying to do something this year, April 2024, that he has never done before. And if it works, we'll have to see.
Tiger Woods is there. Tiger Woods is playing in a PGA Tour event this weekend. Took us a while to get there. What's Tiger's role now this weekend at Augusta?
Somebody asked him if he was feeling like he could be an honorary starter, how he kind of felt about, just being this honorary golfer while here. There's no argument that, of course, over the last half century or so, he's been, the best participant in the Masters tournament out of anyone bar none, but he basically trotted out his usual line. If everything falls in my favor, I feel like I've got one more green jacket in me. I feel like I could win again. So, this is a guy who's been broken in a million pieces, put back together, Humpty Dumpty had a great fall, put them all back, try to do it all over again. And he just loves golf so much. It's kind of maybe to his detriment, but it's all he's ever known. Only child. He started playing golf when he was 9 months old. He said that in his press conference. He's been playing competitive tournaments for 45 years almost. He's been playing golf tournaments for, 40 plus years, and he still loves it. He loves the chase. He loves the competition. He loves the camaraderie. And he doesn't know anything else. So this week, he's gunning to try to make his 24th straight cut at the Masters, which would be a record. He's currently tied with three others, I think, at 23. So, he wants to do that. That means something to him. But more than anything, he wants to win. He's going to have a real comfortable pairing with Jason Day and with Max Homa. And this is Augusta National, and this is Tiger Woods. And even though he's, not the healthy guy he's ever been, he's still, in my opinion, got a chance to navigate his way around this golf course because of how high his Augusta National IQ is, as compared to pretty much everyone else on the property.
I was watching Tiger's press conference today before I headed to work, and a lot of the questions were just about his health and his physical state and how he gets ready to perform. And, I mean, I know that it's still a physical game, although it is not like, gearing up for a football game. But he said he was getting up at 2 in the morning to start if he has an early tee time, his process to getting ready to be on the course. And I was just stunned at, like, I hope people understand that, like, he's been put together, he's been broken in a million pieces. Like, the physical feat of just golfing for Tiger Woods, it still hasn't taken away his joy, his love, his dedication, his drive. Like, the hunger that he had on the mic today when, what do you want to do? I want to win. Like, I'm still a competitor. Like, I'm not here to be your talking head of, a starter. So I think that is what makes me think, why not? Like, why can't he have another great showing, right? It's the Tiger Woods story that we've all fallen in love with and followed, is that he doesn't let any of that affect how he cares so deeply about this game. I thought it was just stunning to listen to him talk.
And as he gets older, he becomes a lot more introspective, I guess, like what this game actually means to him and what the game has afforded him, basically been his passport to the world. And he said as such, you'd mentioned you were watching the presser. So just the way that he has had all these moments now as a father, you know, as an individual, as, you know, a professional, you know, personally. The game, the golf game, and his golf game is the only reason why he's been able to do all these things. So, you know, it definitely means a lot to him. And like I mentioned, I think the walking is the harder part. The golfing is not that difficult for him, and the knowledge, you know, about where the putts break and where to hit it and et cetera, like he's got that dialed, and he's got that dialed probably more than anyone. But can he make it around this golf course 4 times? Thankfully, the weather, although it's supposed to be pretty poor on Thursday, it's not supposed to be cold. It's supposed to be in the 80s Fahrenheit wise on Thursday, and then kind of hovering around that high 70s, low 80s mark for the balance of the weekend. So assuming he manages to get through that Thursday rain situation, like I said, it's still going to be warm. So it's going to be as ideal as it can be for Tiger over these next 4 days.
We were chatting with Adam Stanley of Sportsnet from Augusta, Georgia, ahead of the Masters. It's a Tiger-like price for Scottie Scheffler at this tournament. No, not that I'm disagreeing with it at all, but I wonder if it's slightly exaggerated. I mean, the field is the field. It's a field that, you know, pays respect to those who have won and may not be the strongest that we'll see in golf over the 2024 season. But it does feel, despite him winning and despite him having the game to win again, that it might be a little bit much that he's that short of a favorite. Is it fully and completely warranted what the price is right now on Scottie Scheffler?
I think it is, because of, it's not just like the golfing stuff. It's also the mental approach to not only this week, but basically anytime he tees it up. Like, we're talking about a guy who at the Players' Championship was thinking about withdrawing on Friday evening with that neck injury. His caddy was shocked that he managed to make it through the Saturday round. And then obviously everyone knows what happened on the Sunday. Lowest final round score by winner ever, comes back, wins the Players, first person in that tournament history to go back-to-back. So when you think about Scottie Scheffler from tee to green, we're talking about like all time efforting. We're talking about a guy who, even if he's not at 100% health, is still better than basically everyone on the tour hitting the golf ball. The putting obviously is the big question mark. He seems to have found some semblance of a new thing that is working in his favor. So again, not even if he putts average, even if he putts, you know, just not terrible, he should be firmly in the mix. And then I think that his overarching approach on the mental side to, you know, just golf not being important, it's not what he's all about. You know, golf is his job, golf's not his life. He's made that very clear. And I think the fact that he's already won this championship, I think if he hadn't won a major, it would be a lot more like, man, what are you doing? When are you going to get over the hump? When are you going to do it? Come on, come on, come on. But because he's done it, and because he just keeps winning, and he keeps winning at different places and in different ways, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, Scotty, if you want to win the Masters, you got to go through Scottie Scheffler for sure.
We're chatting with Adam Stanley down at Augusta ahead of the Masters. And so, of course, we got to ask you about the Canadians. You had a great preview up on sportsnet.ca that everybody can check out. And you got a chance to see the Canadians in their practice round this morning, all four of them, Mike Weir, Corey Connors, Nick Taylor, and Adam Hadwin. So, I mean, this is a really big summer ahead for Canadian golfers. Obviously, the Olympics are on the horizon. We can get into that, just about the qualifying of it all. But this is the premier weekend, and four Canadians having a moment. It's just, it's start like a big start for what I hope is a really successful summer. So how are they handling it all? What's their energy around it? And like, what's the chance that one of these guys can make something happen?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, hopefully this Canadian crew starts to transcend, you know, general sports, and people who care about just sports in Canada will be able to be excited about the fact that we've got this golden generation of guys who can win pretty much any week on the PGA Tour. You know, Brooke Henderson, obviously, aside on the women's side, who has won 13 times, has won 2 majors, has basically done it all already. On the men's side, we've got this group that really the only logistical or logical thing, excuse me, for them to do next is to start contending in major championships at a more frequent pace. And that is kind of the line that they've all trotted out, and Mike Weir has said it too. It's like, these guys have the game. They've won. They know what it takes to win on the PGA Tour. Putting yourself in the mix on a Sunday afternoon at a major is a whole other ball game. And you have to kind of mentally be able to prepare yourself and be ready to rise to those moments. So, you know, this is the group, this is the time. Corey Connors, probably from an Augusta National fit perspective, is probably playing this golf course the best. Three straight top 10 finishes, missed the cut last year, but was coming in after a win at the Valero Texas Open. So he admitted, you know, his mind was kind of all over the place. So I think Corey's the guy that plays this golf course well, has done a lot of great things on this golf course. I wouldn't be surprised if he's, you know, more so in the mix maybe than the other two guys. And I only say that because Adam Hadwin and Nick Taylor, their last Masters, was in 2020, which was obviously the pandemic impacted one. There was no fans. You know, Nick took FaceTime down Magnolia Lane because no one from his family could come with him. He was like, this is my first real Masters experience. So that's going to be an adjustment. Adam Hadwin, same deal. You know, he played in 2018. That was his last Masters. You know, that was 6 years ago. A lot's changed since then. So, you know, I think once those guys maybe get over the mental hurdle of the Masters, then I think they may be okay. But again, you know, they only got the two rounds to make the cut. So that realization may come a little bit too late. That's not to say that their games aren't dialed in. Obviously, Nick Taylor, a winner on the PGA Tour already this year. But, you know, out of those three, I just think based on body of work at Augusta National, Corey would probably be my choice for the guy to be, you know, in the mix and contending and maybe have a chance to win this thing come Sunday.
Last one for you, Adam, and thanks so much for being very generous with your time. Let's eliminate the Canadians. Let's eliminate the favorite, Scottie Scheffler. Is there a golfer that you are gravitating towards when thinking about having either a big week or winning this thing?
Yeah, so I think Brooks Koepka is a name that's really coming up to me. Brooks is just, you know, he's just a menace when it comes to the major championships. And, you know, he knows how to play this golf course. He's fully healthy, and he's ready to rock. Like, he gets up for the majors. So wouldn't be surprised to see Brooks. And I love that we started talking about Hideki off the top, because Deck I think man. Hideki, you don't need to convert me. Like, okay. I was gonna bring him up. There's only been two guys to have finished in the top 20 the last 4 years at the Masters. Scottie Scheffler is one of them, and Hideki is the other. Hideki, a winner already this year. Hideki's more dialed health-wise than he has been over the last number of years. So like Brooks, likes Hideki. Shane Lowry, probably a long shot guy for me, and Russell Henley, another long shot guy for me to watch out for this week at the Masters.
Yes, so I got my bets up, and I'm feeling very confident now because I'm drinking the same Kool-Aid that Adam Stanley is, so I'm feeling good. I'm gonna make some money this weekend, Adam. Thanks so much. Well, appreciate your time. Have the best weekend ever. Looking forward to everything you're gonna do coverage wise, and we'll be chatting lots this summer. So enjoy this one, and we'll chat soon.
Looking forward to it. Thanks you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Adam Stanley, of course, of Sportsnet, and that is awesome for me. Bets, my futures.
Are they already in?
Yeah, they're in. We were talking about it off air. I got
Shane Lowry in as well. I like Shane Lowry this week.
Russell Henley, they said Henley.
You got Henley, eh?
Buddy, I was feeling
looking at Adam Stanley's notes.
The only person I didn't really know the vibe around was Brooks. So
impossible to know the vibe unless
it's very hard to know the vibe around
you've
Brooks.
Got five satellite dishes and you can get live golf in your home. I'm sure there is a way.
I'm sure there's a way. So this is exciting. Yeah, the Masters kicking off. Of course, Adam's going to be all over that on sportsnet.ca. Take a look at his social as well. Would love to get myself to that. I think going to the Masters would be a top three sporting event that I'd love to attend.
I don't even know if there's something that would compare.
Like the Super Bowl or the Olympics. Like, I'd like to see an Olympic gold medal hockey game between Canada and United States.
Yeah, but like, there's no promise of it, right? Like, you could buy the tickets 6 months out before. I don't know. Maybe it's Czechia and Finland in the final. That'd be great.
You get plopped into your dream scenario. The Masters is that it's got to be just like 1A, 1B.
I just feel like it's something that I can't exit this earth without doing. And I don't know if there's anything else that really qualifies.
Well, maybe
for that.
Adam Stanley needs two assistants next summer. We're ready. Next spring, we'll head down.
Wait for another eclipse to get there.
Oh, that's true. All right, well, this was a fun one. There's lots going on in the network tonight. In about 5 minutes, you can watch the Pacers and the Raptors on Sportsnet 1. Of course, Seattle and Toronto up on Sportsnet. And they'll also be up on Sportsnet 590 The Fan if you want to watch the Mariners and the Blue Jays in Game 2 with Bassett on the mound, the hound on Looney Dogs. Perfect Tuesday. Have a great night, everyone.